It's the Tiltcast, episode 602, Quality Jerk.
And this week, guys, we talk Monster Hunter Rise, Dragon Age The Veilguard, and Zero Sievert. Stay tuned.
You pronounced it right.
And we're back.
Woohoo!
It is the Tiltcast. It is an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
Okay, about to say, geez, are you going to... I am
confused.
Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about, I don't know, 15 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. All three of us have a headache.
Yeah, it's not a good day.
Jason's like on delay.
I woke up at like 2:30 this morning with it, and it's just not gone away. I even went back to sleep and slept till like 10:30, and it's still fucking there. So this is going to be a real fun podcast, guys.
Yay.
Yeah.
My life is pain.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. There must be something in the air. Some kind of pressure change or something.
I don't know. Winter's finally coming. I don't know, man.
Well, I think mine's a combination, but probably between sinus and just doing too much yesterday. Like, I was started the day, like, shuffling stuff between the shed, our house, and we basically turned the camper into like transitional storage for the winter now, you know, because you don't always want to have to go out to the shed for stuff, right? So it makes it easier. So there's like taking all the Halloween stuff down, getting all of Crystal's like Thanksgiving fall stuff out, shifting Christmas into the camper so we don't have to do the whole big haul shuffle to switch out a lot of the fall stuff for Christmas stuff when that comes. And then building a new freaking gate to our yard, because the people who bought the vacant house next door, when they renovated it, they put up this new privacy fence down the property line. And so it was a great opportunity to put a little bit more of a permanent gate up than the cobbled together like egg post and chain link gates that I had in and out of the yard before. Plus, don't really have a great way of sinking a egg post or a chain link post right next to the corner of the house, because the foundation comes out a good foot or so, which isn't good enough to keep dogs in the yard. They can squeeze through. So used a gate kit to build a whole like wooden privacy gate, and that can actually swing all the way to the corner of the house and meet up with it, so dogs can't like just squeeze their way out of the gate, which is awesome. But you know, false advertising on the box says can set up in 1 hour with one person. Fuck you. It took me fucking 6 hours. Bitches.
Just got to have a disclaimer. Must be a normal person.
Or, you know, just a disclaimer. Can take as much as 1 hour, depending on the size of the gate you're building. Because that gate's like the full... the full length of the gate that they say you can build with it is like 6 feet. and mine's 5 feet 8 inches. So, you know, hanging all that yourself, because the way the instructions have you do it is it has you actually build it while part of it is hanging. And I'm like, I could take this down and mostly build this. But because I have to shut everything at an angle, I'm basically having test tolerances of the gate towards the house as I'm building it. So I basically had to build it hanging, which increased the difficulty quite a bit.
Well,
making crap harder on myself, but also easier on myself, because I didn't have to keep taking gate parts down and putting them back up over and over again to test tolerances, right? So, like 6 to 1, half a dozen to the other. So, yeah, that was my fun yesterday. And then the whole week's just been, we've been busy doing a bunch of other stuff, like almost every day this last week. I didn't get home till after 7, so I didn't get to play a whole lot of video games or anything. Just activities. Yay!
Guy.
I feel like I've done activities this week.
I feel like I've done some activities as well. I don't know. Man, can you remind me what I did? I don't remember.
I mean, this morning I did activities. I did I was taking pictures for work, actually. We need some photos to hang up on themed rooms in the office. So I was out taking pictures of Tulsa landmarks and didn't realize that my sensor was dirty. So I think I'm going to end up having to redo most of them, which kind of sucks. But yeah, there's a lot of, you know, local landmarks around here. But I got up at 0:00 a.m. to go driving around, trying to find the best angle on a lot of this stuff. And yeah, my sensor was dirty. And some of this I can't clean up. I've got a great photo of the Route 66 sign. And, yeah, there's no cleaning it up, because there's just no way of cleaning the dirt in a place. It's too close, like the dirt, there's too much lens dirt. Thankfully, my Skyline ended up working out. I think the one I sent you guys, the one I ended up working with.
Yeah, that one actually looks really good.
It's been a long time cleaning that up. But, yeah, I've got some that I need to redo, and that kind of sucks, because I don't got a lot of time. You know, it is that time of year where it gets dark at, you know, 5:15. You get off work, you don't have enough time to do anything. And I get to work before the sun comes up, so it's like, ugh.
Yeah. I don't mind it anymore, I suppose. It used to suck, like the whole time change thing used to suck real hard, because working nights, I mean, I would be safely like driving home before the sun came up and all that jazz, right?
Right.
I was trying to avoid the sun when I was working nights. Now, it's, I guess, not a big deal. Ooh. Sorry, I'm still very sleepy. But yeah, what really does suck is that it gets dark quick up here. So yesterday we were cooking pasties, because, you know, that's what we do. My brother called, you know, brother texts me. He's like, so what you doing after pasties? And I'm like, I don't know. probably play video games or something, right?
Right.
Like, oh, how about you come out to, you know, to my property, and we're gonna fire off some rounds at some pumpkins that we, you know, from, you know, Halloween. I'm like, all right, I need to you know, get some practice in anyway. He was sighting his hunting rifles for hunting season, which comes up in about a week up here. So it was like, okay, so this is an opportunity to fire off, you know, a few rounds through his hunting rifles at some pumpkins, which are great targets, by the way. And put a few rounds through my pistol, and, you know, get a little bit more practice with that. And, we only had like an hour and a half worth of daylight when I got there. It's just like, all right, you're here, and, let's go. So we started loading magazines, and just, we've got a lot of pumpkins to demolish here in a very short period of time. So, it was the beginning of World War III in the back here. He was on his property, so much so that he was getting texts from his buddies that were like 5 miles away, saying, "Ah, I hear you." So, I was out there firing target, you know, shooting targets with, you know, with my pistol while he had his AR out. And then when his magazine was empty with his AR, he'd run over to his hunting rifle and pop off a few, rounds at that thing. There was no pumpkins left. It was pumpkin puree. It was great. It was very, very America. much loud was had. It was a pretty good, hour and a half or so of popping off some rounds. But yeah, that's the sucky thing about, daylight savings time up here is, it gets dark too damn quick. But yeah, that was my big fun for the week is, spend about, $100 in, in ammunition and, another hour and a half or so of, breaking open my, my firearms and cleaning them. So, outside of that, man, it's been kind of like ho-hum week, man. It's not, I haven't had a whole lot of fun. Now I'm watching a random video that popped in, onto my feed of somebody trying to get into a balloon.
The only other interesting thing I did was actually this morning, because for whatever reason Lightroom had to update, because I'm editing photos and having issues with certain things working, and I was like, maybe I need to update, and apparently a fuckload of stuff needed update, and it took forever. And I was like, well, we have this rewards program at work that you can order, like, basically Amazon stuff, right? And so ordered a record cleaner, and I've got one record in particular that, for whatever reason, I got it off, for those of you that aren't vinyl heads, there's a place called Discogs where people trade and sell records, both record stores and individuals. And I had a rarer Opeth record that has always sound kind of like crap. And it's always kind of pissed me off because I like it a lot. And I've only played it like 3 times, tried wiping it down with this little goat hair brush that I got, trying to get rid of the static and any kind of dust that's in it. And I got this cleaner. I was like, this is the perfect record to test it with. Holy shit, it does make a difference. And it did not take that long. It's a weird thing. It's a little contraption where you slide half the record in this long box, and you put a little bit of cleaning solution on these felt pads, and you just spin the record a few times one direction, a few times the other direction. It's like an alcohol-based cleaner, so it dries really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a minute. You know, it took me longer to figure out how it all put together than it did for me to actually mess with it. It took me about a minute. Took about a minute of drying. Threw it on. That was actually what I was listening to while I was editing that photo. Like, holy shit, it makes a huge difference. Sounded almost brand new. I was like, oh, well, any of the other ones I got that sound a little bit crappy, I might try cleaning. But, yeah, it's, those things do work. Like, if your record sounds like shit, it's probably dirty.
Yep. And alcohol's the best cleaner you can use because it's not going to destroy the vinyl and it's going to dry quickly.
Oh.
Isopropyl is great for cleaning lots of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it's exactly that. It's like a lubricant plus a cleaner. But yeah, it totally works. Would recommend. Does not need a ultrasonic cleaning. Like, there are some people that get pretty crazy. Like, this is a very expensive hobby. And now there's these ultrasonic cleaners that people use to clean jewelry. And there is several people figured out that they could use distilled water in those and clean record grooves. And you can buy those from anywhere from about $200 to about $1,500. And it'll spend an hour running your record through that ultrasonic cleaner. And I've heard they work pretty good, but I'm not spending this. This I got for free and it retails for about $60.
Yeah.
And it did a pretty good job for $60. Like I said, went from sounding scratchy and kind of distorted, etc. And it was a little bit warped too. And because of the way it holds it, it actually straightened it out a little bit. So yeah. Yeah. You can find one of those things. It's like a spin wash kind of thing. Totally worth it. And yeah, it took me a minute. I'm not going to sit it in a freaking ultrasonic cleaner for an hour. That's ridiculous.
We were actually looking at ultrasonic cleaners at work. I mean, they're great for cleaning PCBs, or you know.
What do you put like a non-conductive solution in there?
Yeah, well, you just use 99% isopropyl,
and it doesn't dissolve like any kind of adhesive or anything.
No, well, it might dissolve adhesives, but I mean, if you're if you're using glue on your PCB, then there's problems. it gets stickers off of the PCBs as well. So a lot of
well, yeah,
like,
but
you use your old dirty shit, right?
I guess everything's soldered on those, right?
Yeah. So most, you know, so. Yeah.
So, what are you like throwing a ramp stick in there or what?
Well, we were going to use.
Or like a whole motherboard?
A motherboard.
Yeah.
So, the environment that I work in gets very dusty. And because we work in a print shop as well, it can get solvents, you know, and solvents will, you know, the solvents will settle. And it'll start to take off paint and shit like that. Well, some of the solvents are actually pigmented. So it's will settle and dry and leave the pigment on a bunch of shit. It's nasty trying to work on stuff. And it's like, it turns brown because all of the different pigments will mix together. Right. So everything is kind of like this dingy brown, and it's possible to get that stuff off with isopropyl. You just, you know, you have to kind of, you know, wipe it down, you know, a lot to get to a clean surface. And so we go through a lot of isopropyl, like we'll buy 5 gallon jugs or whatever, you know, or we were looking at buying a 5 gallon jug of, you know, of it. To just kind of clean some stuff with, you know, with rag. And I'm like, no, we get it. You know, we get a sonic cleaner, you know, ultrasonic, you know, cleaner, put the, you know, put the components that we need in there. And, you know, we'll just, we'll get even more ISO so that we can put that, you know, put that in there. And we could probably run, you know, two or three machine, you know, parts through, through a tank in that. And that would, you know, that would deep clean basically, you know, basically like motherboards that need to be, you know, deep cleaned. I got vetoed. They're like, well, it's probably just cheaper just to buy new motherboards. And I'm like, yeah, well, some of the older ones, you can't do that anymore. Yeah, I would love to have an ultrasonic cleaner available. That would be great. Those are great tools. They're just stupid expensive. I'll still probably win this argument, but I have to find a spot for it. The counter argument, get this shit. The counter argument, somebody else in, you know, in IT, I will not name. Their counter argument was, I'm just going to go to, Harbor Freight and get a parts washer. It's all the same.
Wait, what?
No.
First of all, you said Harbor Freight.
A Harbor Freight parts washer. And just putting ISO in the tank for that.
No.
Like, okay. I'm like, no. You're going to use a bristle brush to, you know, to clean stuff off of a motherboard? He's like, yeah, why not? Like, you're going to bend every pin on that thing. sometimes it's fun as hell working with this guy. But sometimes he comes up with some shit, man. His favorite place to go is Harbor Freight. The second favorite place to go is Lowe's.
To me, they are both well, I haven't been to Harbor Freight in a while. I think they've got a lot of cheap shit.
It is Chinesium Central. It is one or two use tools. I mean, they have the tools that that you need, and some of those tools are pretty good deals. I mean, I will give them that. I needed.
Yeah, if you need like a screwdriver or something, yeah, go to Harbor Freight. Yeah. Like if you need something you're going to use on the regular that you need quality, like maybe not go to Harbor Freight.
Well, I mean, yeah, I needed some long Torx, you know, screwdrivers basically, and found them there. Oh yeah. But I would not buy I would not buy an angle grinder or anything like that. You know, anything that could explode and fucking damage me. No. Saw, anything electrical. I mean, maybe I might get a cheap drill, but I wouldn't actually do it, you know, get anything that was going to be like heavy duty, because that shit is not. The one thing that Harbor Freight sells that is that I would hard no completely pass if I had to work on a car or anything and I saw this in a person's garage, I would just leave. Is Harbor Freight jacks. If you're gonna put,
yeah, I'm not gonna. Car, you I'm want
jacks?
I want it to be quality jack.
I want it to be a quality jack. I do not want those damn things to fail. The last thing I want to, the last thing I want to see is the last thing I see is a fucking car coming down on my face.
I think all guys want a quality jack.
I mean, you're not wrong. Sips my tea. Yeah. But
I'm 12.
We're probably at 17 and a half minutes now. Let's talk video games.
Jason, did you get a chance to play anything?
I said it earlier. Nope.
I didn't really
do a whole lot. I did start Helldivers today.
Okay.
Was it on Steam?
The wife let me pick that up. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to jump into some of that together at some point. You can play with randos. It'll be a lot more fun if you play with one of us, though.
Exactly. Well, and I already played like first couple missions, you know, like solo. But
yeah, it's on super. I don't know. Like, I think I got to medium playing by myself, but like, it is infinitely better to play with somebody else. It is definitely a game that is better with friends because it's kind of built around that. It doesn't have AI or anything either, does it, Rusty? It's just you. I haven't played it solo in so long.
Yeah, it's just you. Yeah, it's
just you.
Yeah, that gets difficult.
Well, yes, but it's still possible. I have not had any problems with playing with randos, though. Mainly because you get in there.
It's cooperative. I think that's part of the deal.
Yeah, it's cooperative. There is friendly fire. I mean, it's possible. But for the most part, there wasn't a whole lot of extra trolling. Like, most of the problems that I had was people just fucking leaving. You know, or they were crashing out or something like that. I don't know. But, you know, they would, at that time, like early on, you know, like after it released, people would troll people by getting mostly through a mission and then just kicking people. Well, now if that happens, you still get rewards. So you're basically, you know, it's de-incentivized. You get more rewards if everybody finishes, you know? So it's not a bad, you know, bad deal. It didn't happen very often, you know, getting into a random group. You might get one or two missions, with that random group before somebody leaves or the lobby decides to end or whatever. But, you know, it wasn't very hard to get into a full group. So if you're not, if we're not around, you know, that's all to say. If we're not around, it's like, you know, it's totally possible just, you know, to play, you know, play with randos and get a good experience out of it. that is a game, man. I don't know if, you know, I haven't really gone back to, you know, thought about going back to it really, but. I mean, it is a very fun game. They did everything right, and they're listening to their community a lot more than most games do. My biggest thing is, you know, trying to, you know, to catch up with all the war bombs if I come back. But I'd still be ahead of you if that was the case. But.
Be ahead of me too.
Yeah. I did finish a lot of war bonds. War bonds are basically like a little mini event. You know, you can get your get weapons and armor and shit like that out of them.
I've just got too much to play right now. Like, that's a good problem to have, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It is.
I have. I wish that I could, I wish I could just kind of, you know, go forward in time a little bit, but,
I wish I could,
yeah,
finish a couple things, to be honest with you. I'm trying. I've just got really long games. Rusty, have you, I guess I'll talk about mine last. What have you been up to?
Well, the reason why I want to, you know, go forward in time is because I'm playing, Monster Hunter again.
The OG? World?
Monster Hunter, well, Monster Hunter Rise on PC is what I'm playing. So, Monster Hunter is a, Monster Hunter Rise is a, it's basically a Switch port. That's why it looks, the way it does on PC. It, you know, I think Monster Hunter World looked better, but it was also not optimized for a fucking Switch, right? What I want is I want a Monster Hunter that's not that. I want a Monster Hunter that is, you know, a good quality, looks good, but also plays very well. And so I had been, I didn't play any of the Monster Hunter, Wilds beta, but I kind of kicking myself for not at, at this point. I, after playing Rise for a little bit, or going back to Rise for a little bit, I watched basically, any videos that I could of Wilds. And I'll tell you right now, come February when that comes out, that game is an instant buy.
Yeah, I'll probably be up on it. We've got, speaking of stuff coming up really soon, like it's what, a couple weeks away, we've got Stalker coming out.
Yeah, Stalker's coming out.
That's like super high on my radar, and it's on Game Pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and it, there's some, some good shit coming out. I'm just kind of in a weird headspace at the moment where I want to play something other than Final Fantasy. But, I also don't want, I really don't want a stupid long experience. I just want some, some pick up and put down. And Monster Hunter's like, yeah, you can, you fight a monster or two, and then you can kind of move on with your day,
Yeah, I've been in that weird space where I'm trying to figure out exactly where to put my time. You know, I'm still getting used to not being done with everything till about 6:30 and having a couple hours to game. I had a lot of time yesterday, so I didn't have any photo projects yesterday, and I was going to go out and take pictures, but it was still wet, and I knew I had to climb a hill to go take a picture of downtown and did not want to do that in mud. So I was like, all right, well, that's a Sunday morning project. Today's just going to be video games. So I got a lot of gaming in yesterday. Played a lot more Zero Cyber, kind of leveling up my character and getting to the point where I've got a faction I'm aligned with. That game's still fun. I'm still at about a 50% survival rate. Just again, to, it's a extraction shooter, essentially, right? Top down. You kind of get to a point where you realize what you need to prioritize loot-wise, and then what's actually an upgrade and what's not, and then kind of what kind of things you can get from what maps. I'm getting to a point where I'm feeling a little bit more confident, but it doesn't punish you too hard. It's just it's lost time, right? If you fuck up on a map and you die, well, then you have to start over from the – and it's like it – you die, and then you lose 2 hours, right? So I haven't gotten any night vision goggles, so it's still pretty difficult for me to do a nighttime map, just because all the monsters in those maps are a lot more prevalent at night, and you've got, like, very little reaction time to mess with them if you get fucked. It does have a pretty good sense of sound design, right? You'll hear footsteps and things like that at night, and if there are people, you'll see their flashlights out in the dark. But if they're not people, they don't, the little ghouls and mutants in the maps don't need flashlights. And you just start hearing the noises of them or their footsteps. And then you just start spinning 360 in circles, looking to see what's about to chomp at you and hoping you have a gun that you can take care of something or dispatch something very quickly. So when you die, getting back to that, it moves up the time 2 hours. So it's daytime for about eight in the morning till about 7 in the evening in this game, maybe 6 or 7. And every minute is about a second. So if you die, you lose 2 hours. You don't lose your stuff, but you have whatever you had right before you went into that map. So, you know, if that happens, then you need to go to sleep and heal your, you know, like try to pass time or go and mod weapons or whatever. But you can usually run like 2 or 3 missions in a day before your character needs to sleep. You start running out of like energy essentially anyway. So at a certain point you got to rest, or you end up drinking a lot of coffee if you've got your kitchen set up for that, or you're eating a lot of chocolate because chocolate in this game also helps with your awakeness. So it's an interesting little game. Still playing that. That's usually what I play when I'm talking to my girlfriend, because it's light, you know. It's fun. It's light. I've been playing a little bit more of the Castlevania expansion. Not a lot, though. Or Vampire Survivors, I guess, is what I should have mentioned. It's actually what I was playing while me and Jason were talking earlier. A lot of extra content for $4. Like, a lot of extra content. If you're interested in Vampire Survivors, any expansion is kind of like an instant yes. Just unlocked Leon Belmont. Is that right? It's Belmont, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I think so. But yeah, he's got his whip that I was working on the evolution for, and playing on hyper, trying to get through the levels really fast. But that game's infinite fun, right? It's just, you want to play a Vampire Survivors game, you should start with Vampire Survivors, and everything else is kind of as good. Played a little bit of MechWarrior, didn't get as far because Dragon Age had come out, and I'm trying to... apparently that game's a lot longer than I expected. I don't even feel like I've done all that much, and I think I got about 20 hours in this week. When you lose 2 hours a day, you lose 2 hours a day of gaming. So I could be 30 hours further, but I've lost 2 hours a day due to driving and doing things for work. Mm-hmm. So about 20 hours in, I've got a Spellblade build built around electricity. I think when I first started playing it, I had kind of no idea how the combo system worked. There's like a combo, like, so he's got an orb and a dagger. The orb goes out, and it's, there's like kind of a, I'll go back. So an enemy can have a barrier or armor or both, right? Barriers require consistent damage, so like a beam or a series of a lot of light attacks, etc. Armor requires heavy attacks, and then, you know, regular health just requires whatever. And once they're at regular health, I can do this thing called an arcane explosion. So I hit something 3 times with my orb, and then I let out a heavy attack, and it blows them up a little bit, right? Which I say a little bit. That's where I get all my crits from. And all of my damage is built around building up those orbs and those explosions, essentially. And getting mana back from hitting all the time. So there's a little bit of a dance with it. Consistently on hard, beating stuff that's about 10 levels too high for me, just because I'm exploring the map. So it feels pretty good. I think, look at the Spellblade builds. There's a whole bunch of information out there on like what to build around, but my character's level 30 right now with a Spellblade build and seems to be powering through pretty consistently. The game's paced a little bit weird. I think if they'd have called it anything other than Dragon Age, I think it would have gotten... It's not consistent for Dragon Age, and I've been trying to figure out like what it is, and then I've read some articles that have kind of summed it up. I think I want to say it might have been PC Gamer was essentially saying like all the other Dragon Ages had the canon of the universe, but not the canon of characters, right? So in the first one, you had a warden, right? You played as a Grey Warden, and then in the second one, I think you're a Grey Warden, but you kind of grow up with him in... is it Thetis, I think? I don't know. Anyways, in one of the cities, and it's all based around that town and the growth of your character through his lifetime. And then Inquisition was based around the Inquisition, which was kind of like a spinoff group, right, that was trying to take on the Blight. And it had a central cast of characters, but none of those characters, except for, I think, like Morgan, followed the game. I think Morgan is through all the games, so that's like that one of the central characters. But then Solas is in this game, as well as Morgan. And, like, they loosely tie to, like, they tie a lot back to the Inquisition events, and it feels a little bit disjointed. It's hard to describe other than just play the game, and you'll see what I'm talking about, but it doesn't feel real consistent. I want to say the preview that everybody showed of that first level, which is essentially just a tutorial, is really neon, and that is not the majority of the game. In fact, it's really only like one part of one area that looks like that, and everything else isn't that neon. So I'm not as put off by the art style as I was initially. I am still pretty off put by, so I'll tell you, there is this one thing that just kind of drives me nuts. The different like races, right? Like you got elves, you got Qunari, you got dwarves, don't look different enough from each other. So in prior games, right, dwarves are really like super stocky, really square faced, right? Super epic beards, like very distinctly not a human, right? These look like dwarves with human. It's kind of like they took the human face and applied it to all the different races. The one that's especially like disconnected from the art style from all the other games, the Qunari. The Qunari really just look like people with horns that are oversized.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that super square head and square neck that they had in the other games.
My gosh.
And, well, no, it just, they don't look like almost like a golem, you know what I mean? Like they almost look like they're made out of stone in the other games. And right. This game, they really don't. Like it looks like a human with horns, right? And it doesn't look right. The elves, the same thing. Like the elves, like they got some kind of chunky elves, right? But like they kind of use the human body template for the elves too. So that it just looks like a person with pointy ears, right? They at least did them the service of like not putting a lot of facial hair on them, because in the other games, right, the elves didn't have facial hair. And in some cases, right, like the Solas body looks essentially the same, but like that art style, whoever designed the characters, I'm just like, what are you thinking? Because it just, again, it just looks like reskins of humans. And so like that kind of throws me off. But like it wants you to do story quests, right? And then it wants you to do side quests. And there's a lot of side quests. And the side quests are pretty fun, like, and pretty enjoyable. But, like, there's not as many as, like, an Assassin's Creed, right? Like, Assassin's Creed is pretty offensive with this, right, of just pointless fetch quests. Most of these are, like, investigations or puzzles. And so they have these, like, this really easy puzzle of that gets you extra health. So if you see a certain statue that looks kind of like a Solas statue, you activate it and it shoots out these three like spinning like things that you got to shoot. And if you find them in the area that you're in, then you get an extra 100 health, which is actually pretty important. So like every time you see one of these, you probably should do it. It's a really easy puzzle though. They have these other like locked, like all the loot and stuff are like locked behind puzzles. I would say not all, but a lot of it is locked behind different puzzles. Like there's another one where these like laser orbs that are all connected to each other, and you got to find the one that's not shielded, and then that all connects to everything else, right? Or you have a character with a special ability that unlocks a platform, right? There's a whole bunch of like different platform types that are unlocked by different characters in your party, right? In your party. And so like all that stuff, it works pretty well. Like I've enjoyed the puzzles aren't super hard, but they're not super easy either. Like to me, they're kind of just right. Like they're not so hard that they're annoying, but they do make you use your brain most of the time. Like there hasn't been a puzzle that's taken me longer than like 5 or 10 minutes to figure out. Right. But like all the areas are like jam packed with like little, like every little nook and cranny has got some form of like loot that you need for something. And whether it be crafting materials, so like at your base, you can upgrade the tier list of something, right? So like level 1 through, I don't know, 20 or whatever, right? So I'm up to like tier level 7. And the materials you find in the world are what you use to upgrade that. And then the vendors that you find in the world unlock the like additional effects on an item. So I'll give you a good example. Say it like my character's got a knife, right? And the vendor in the area that I'm at might sell stuff that's related to this kind of like character type, right? Let's say it's mage knives, right? And my first ability will be like plus 20 shocking damage. And then the second ability will be like afflictions apply one more dot. And then the third ability might be like get health back, right? Well, all those additional abilities are unlocked behind the merchants. So you're not really buying gear, but you're unlocking with gold additional itemization or, you know, effects on the, you know, either the armor or weapons that you have. And that's tied to each region in the game. There are decisions that you make that kind of like lock you out of certain parts of that. One major decision pretty early on in the game, you kind of like have like an either or kind of decision, right? And depending on what either or you make, like one area is pretty much altered completely. But as the game progresses, like each one of these areas has different areas that's like locked off, and they're pretty intricate. Like I actually do like the level design choice that they made of everything being super jam-packed full of stuff and then just kind of being gated by game progression. And there's fast travel everywhere, so you could be like, okay, I didn't unlock this area last time. What's over there? And then quests open up over there, right? Then I've got a reason to explore. And then in each of these areas, right, for everything you break, like there's a big emphasis on breaking barrels and boxes for additional loot items that you can use as crafting materials or items to sell to vendors. There's no inventory limit, which is nice. And I like breaking boxes. I know that's a, like a tried and true, like, you know, game trope, right? Or RPG trope at this point, right? Break a crate, get something wrong. You break a crate, you get wood. You might get like ore or something else that you can use later or a little bit of money. You kind of have to do that. And then all the different like junk items you sell increase the faction's rep. And it sounds like pretty complex, but it's not. Like after you've played it for about an hour, you start to get it. Like as you, so like there's this forest area, right? And it has items that one of my characters that I use a lot, this dwarf, basically kind of like a dwarf ranger, which seems weird, but just follow me here. It's a dwarf, this dwarf lady with a bow, right? Okay. She's my main BFF in this game because she's just, she synergizes with my character really well. All of her upgrades are in this one area. And as I sell junk to this vendor, it builds up that vendor's rep. And then after a certain point, that rep gets to where I can unlock it. So once I unlock that rep, now I have level, you know, the level 3 upgrades that they can do to different pieces of gear, including my, you know, my NPC's gear. And the NPCs are important because they set up status effects for you to combo off of. And it's kind of got that Mass Effect 3, like, hold down right button to pause time for a second and order people to do different things. And where that becomes important is, like, I've got a tank that I pretty frequently use a lot. And even if he just attacks somebody, that taunts them. So let's say I'm getting overwhelmed by the boss and there's a bunch of ads and I need all the hate off of me. Well, I'm going to take my tank. And even if his taunt's on cooldown, I'm going to have him attack the, you know, the main boss for a second to pull him off of me and then use his group taunt, right, to pull all the enemies away from me. And then I'm going to swarm it with AoE, right, and take down the adds and set up some status effects on the boss, which in this case for me, because of the way my character's built, is either fire or shock. And then shock, like, does exactly what you think it would do. It paralyzes after it's built up enough. So like those types of mechanics are kind of cool. I like all of that stuff. The story's a little bit, like I said, the story's a little bit disjointed, but the like moment to moment gameplay's pretty decent. I mean, I'm still playing it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what to rate it though at this point, but the customization in this game is pretty good, even though I don't like all of the art style for like all the armors. Like it's not real like old school mage centric. Like my mage looks a little too highly stylized. But you can go to your wardrobe and your base. And so for every piece of gear you unlock, right, like it unlocks a kind of like Diablo, right? You get a new piece of gear and it has a certain like transmog, right? You've got the same thing here. You can apply transmogs to all your gear and make it look cool. But it's missing a palette, like a color palette selection, which would help because I'd like to make my character like all black, right? Like I want him to look like dark and mysterious because his background is necromancy. I've got a really cool looking necromancer style mask, which is not my actual headpiece, but it looks like cool as shit. Where a lot of my other stuff like looks like it belongs on a knight, like it shouldn't belong on a mage. So, yeah, like it's got a whole transmog function that will just sit on that template even as you upgrade or change out gear. and keep your character looking pretty sick. I've heard the warrior class is also pretty fun to play. I don't know about the rogue. I think if I was to do this again, I might actually start with a warrior, because without like naming who it is and what they do, like the game kind of gives you two warriors, two mages, and two rogues, right? But I feel like you kind of, if you're not already a warrior, you always need to have a warrior in your party, because you need somebody to taunt people off of you. And I didn't get that my first warrior. I've got both warriors now. I didn't get my first warrior till like a very significant amount of time had passed in the game. And the two rogues that you get are both like archers, essentially. They're not like dagger rogues, although I wonder if you could spec them for dagger. I don't know. But they're both of their main weapons are bow and arrows. So, yeah, it's just a, wait, no. Yeah, there is a different rogue. Anyways, yeah, there is one dagger rogue. I had to think about it a second. Who's the other person? I'm sitting here thinking like, yeah, there's a bow and arrow rogue, and then there's a dagger rogue. There's a sword and board warrior, and there's a fury warrior, essentially, right? Like somebody who's got two hands, two weapons, but both of them can taunt, right? But yeah, like the moment to moment gameplay is good. One thing that took me way too long to figure out is you need to adjust your shader cache size on your card in order for this to stop. So mine would crash about once an hour. And it kept giving me a certain error that had to do with, you know, it's like it ran out of, resources or something. I was like, what the fuck's going on? I've got a 4090. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently NVIDIA, even though it's set to automatically assign shader cache, doesn't assign enough shader cache to this game. So I went in and readjusted it to be the same size as my video memory on my card. And now it stopped crashing. It runs, like I told you guys last week, like it runs buttery smooth again on a 4090, but I've heard a lot of reports from a lot of people at several different card levels saying this runs buttery smooth. It runs really good on PlayStation 5. And it looks really sharp, right? Like still kind of a little bit of a cartoony template on like hyper detailed, textures. So like it looks good. The spell effects look good. Again, the story, I think, needs a little bit of work. I don't think that any of the original writers of Dragon Age are a part of this. And the fact that there's so little blood needs some rework, because like Dragon Age was always supposed to be super gory, and this is not super gory. It's very PG-13 on the blood.
Oh, geez, seriously?
Yeah, like it's just, there's not, I'm sitting here blowing through these like cysts of like blight, and there's no bodily fluids covering my character. I mean, not that my character just needs to have bodily fluids all over them, but like it would be a little bit more brutal if there was blood. And I'm sure there'll be some kind of mod at some point. But yeah, like I would say my initial impressions are obviously not as good as Origins, because Origins is amazing. Like, still, I feel like it would still hold up today. You literally had four different classes and four different backstories you could pick from that influenced the whole game. Different set of writers, though. This has got a better first impression than Inquisition so far. So there's that. And definitely better than 2. So I guess we'll see, right? The combat's like leagues ahead of Inquisition. The combat's the best it's ever been in the game for the non-real-time stuff, right? Like the first one is essentially Baldur's Gate 2. So it's definitely not that, but it's got combat like Mass Effect essentially, right? But more melee focused. So for the moment, for the video game part of the game so far, like, has me hooked, and that's a good sign.
It's all right. I've thought about it, but I really don't know if I want to get into it. And that's saying something. I was like,
no, some of the reviewers are saying they put ages. Yeah, a lot of people are saying they put over 100 hours into it.
Maybe I'll give it a try. I don't know.
It's not a $70 game, right? And it's not doesn't natively have de novo. So it just, that's probably why it runs so good. So there's no Denuvo. But I feel like we need a break. Do you guys feel like we need a break?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back. And we're back.
Again. All right.
Home improvement. Is that a... That was Tim.
Yeah. Dude. So, did this be the news section?
Yes.
And we have some... We have some news. Do we have news? Yeah, there's some news.
There's definitely some news.
Go for it.
You guys remember, do you guys remember what Project Polaris is?
Project Polaris. Refresh my memory, sir.
Witcher 4.
Witcher 4, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
There is there's a whole lot of rumors as to like who's involved, etc., right? But there is, and this is by Game Rant, which is kind of a rumor mill sometimes. There is a possibility or a rumor that it's supposed to be out sometime in 2025. It's a tentative window right now.
Bad doubt.
I doubt too. I feel like it's 2026.
We've gotten more hype for, you know, for games.
It's it's been in development since 2020 though.
That's fine.
So we're on a,
I guess,
5-year cycle so far.
That's true, but I mean the entire team didn't really get to it till last year because of Phantom Liberty.
Right. Phantom Liberty was, you know, was eating up a lot of the dev cycles there.
And it's a finished up. Yeah, and that was a pretty beefy DLC too.
So and one that I still need to find fucking play. Anyway, I don't see that happening next year. I see that being fully fleshed out and announced, so it's no longer a project name but an actual title, and then we'll get to see some of it. And if it does release, it'll be end of the year.
This was found on somebody, I guess, was probably going through something like LinkedIn or something like that, and on the on the website for hiring voice actors, there was a line saying that a tentative release was 2025. So that's how they came to this conclusion.
If it's 2025, that would have to be really late 2025.
Yeah. If they're hiring voice actors and they're saying that it's going to be tentative release 2025, I mean, either these are small bit voice actors or, I just don't see it. Like, there are plenty of other games that have been, have been delayed by, 6 months into 2025 from this year, that have been announced way back in the day, full title releases even, and, it keeps getting pushed back. This is going to be one of those things. It's wishful. I'm not super ready for the continuation of The Witcher at the moment.
I'm looking forward to it, but it's just kind of like as far as things that franchises that haven't completely disappointed for the most part, right? That we're going to get a Witcher before we get a Fallout. So that'll be kind of the next nerdy thing that I'm really into. You know what I mean?
True. We'll definitely get a Witcher before we get a Fallout, but I'm also like, I don't know. I mean, there's games like fucking, was it Avowed? Got pushed. Elder Scrolls has fucking been pushed multiple times. That one was way too early of a name drop for a video game release, by the way. Fucking years and years and years and years have passed since then. But for something as big as The Witcher for CD Projekt,
red. I don't see it happening in the next year. We will get an announcement and maybe a release date, but it's not going to be in, you know, people's hands, in 2025. I'm calling it right now. Because it'd have to be like a fucking December release, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like because of that, like a bad release window for a game when it comes to accolades and people purchasing it, right? It's a good window for purchase if something comes out before Christmas. A bad window for video game awards, though. And a lot of these bigger companies rely on that as part of their promotion for the game.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like November's the last month that something can release and hope to be a part of that, especially right. Bigger games.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's been plenty of discussions where we're going through our game of the year, which we do in January, and we have to be like, okay, well, we have to include December because December was after the video game awards and the major publications do game of the year in December. So if there was something that was dropped in mid to late December or even early December in some places, it doesn't even get into publication. Nobody's talking about it outside of, word of mouth and, like maybe sales numbers, but outside, unless it's a massive release, like some, if you imagine like an Elden Ring dropping in December, it's going to get talked about, right? But none of those things happen because.
Well, it's like even if you have the most dedicated game reviewer, right? Like, I don't know a lot of people that can game more than 16 hours a day, right? Do you think like a game that's like.
It was my job.
Like 70 hours long, right? And you're only getting paid for 40 hours a week, like it takes you 2 weeks. Or I don't know how that works, right? Do they pay them something extra for like putting in the midnight will to beat something and review it, Which I guess they kind of, a lot of times these places get the game a little bit early so they can finish it. Which I can only imagine, right? Like if you got a game reviewer, if I was watching some people on or reading some articles on PC Gamer talking about 105 hours in Dragon Age Veilguard, right? Like that's a whole month's worth of gaming. Pretty consistent, 8 hours a day, right? If you're gaming hourly. So that would be like.
Gaming is a job?
Yeah. Like even streaming, right? Like there are people that speedrun that stuff, but the people reviewing it aren't speedrunning it. And for them to talk about it and give accolades and stuff like that, like it needs to come out a month before December, I think, if it's a fairly long game. But speaking of that, there is a game I've been looking forward to. I already mentioned it on the show already today. But Stalker 2 has officially gone gold after a 14-year saga where it was announced, canceled, re-announced, and delayed 5 times because of the invasion of Ukraine. So gone gold meaning that it is ready for launch as of 2 days ago. So as of the 8th, it is ready for launch, not including any kind of like day one patches or whatever, right? They've got it ready for launch. They're finished with developing the game as of 2 days ago. So that comes out on the 20th, and if you're curious, if you look up Stalker 2 Gone Gold, you'll find a little video detailing out what they did. But that's a big deal because this game is supposed to come out like early last year. I can't remember, but it's well delayed, and part of that is because the studio was in the middle of a conflict zone. And they had to relocate a lot of the people. Not everybody was there, but I think parts of that happened too to even Baldur's Gate, right? Mm. Baldur's Gate 3 was in part of this. One of the studios that was working with them was in the middle of a conflict zone in Ukraine. So like, they are finally in a spot where it's ready to go. I've watched a lot of preview videos of that game. And that's probably the closest thing we're going to get to Fallout till Fallout comes out in a while, right? It's kind of got like Stalker. I don't know if you guys ever played the original, but I've played the original many times and played all the different mods for it too. I say a lot of different mods for it. Still a pretty big emphasis on survival and gun quality and modding your weapons and, guns jamming because you got a shit weapon. Looks like there's a lot of like on the fly gun modding, right? You find a scope that works for your gun, then you can attach it to your gun while you're on the go. Still a lot of emphasis on anomalies and watching your rads and hopefully drinking vodka and smoking cigarettes to reduce your radiation. which, if you want to do a little bit of that, you can do it in Zero Sievert, which is the basically the Super Nintendo roguelite version of Stalker. Looks like there's lots of quests. It looks like a Stalker-esque Stalker game. And I don't know how well that does in 2024, but for all of us, you know, pushing middle-aged gamers who've played a lot of Stalker, my heart is there. This is the game I've probably been looking forward to the most this year is Stalker 2. And it's on Game Pass, so, like, I'm going to play the shit out of this once it comes out. And I'm trying to finish, you know, MechWarrior and Veilguard before that hits. And hopefully I have enough time. I've got a whole other photo project happening next week, so I've got to fucking hustle on this Veilguard. But, yeah. I'm excited, and I'm glad that's finally coming out. That's been quite the saga for that.
For sure.
In other news, one quick piece and then one I'm sure we'll get in discussion about. Quick piece is, board meeting, basically it came out that from the Nintendo president that the Switch's successor will be fully backwards compatible with all current Switch content. But that's all they had to say about it. There's been no other details released. So
you mean for the 10 games that I'm interested in?
Right. But I mean, that's a relief to a lot of people because, you know, the last couple times that's not necessarily been the case.
That's true. And it's only been on the virtual console that they have backwards compatibility. So that's good news for Switch owners.
That is good news for Switch owners who have, you know, more than a couple of games. Like me, my Switch ownership is very focused. But in the bigger piece of Nintendo news, you know, as we heard last month, Nintendo basically threatened Palworld, the developer of Palworld, Pocket Pair, with a lawsuit regarding how monsters are caught and interacted with, etc. And now they've officially filed an injunction.
of all the things.
Basically related to three patents.
So I did get a look at these. There's patent numbers. You can actually look at the patents.
And they have these little, like, kid-like drawings that go with them, too, which is great.
Yeah, it's crazy. So of all the things that I thought going into this, like when I was first playing Palworld, I said, oh, God, they're going to get them on the characters. No, they're going after the Pokeball-style catching and releasing and writing of these pals, right? So not the character design, even though the character designs are really close to some Pokemon. It's the Pokeball catch thing. So these three patents basically have to do with how throwing an item at a creature in the world to catch it, having that character, the creature trying to escape from the capture and riding of a creature in the world. But the way that they're written is in super broad terms. Like, it doesn't say like a ball, like a Pokeball or something like that. When you throw something at them, it's It's super broad, freaking patent talk. It's patent speak. It's super broad. It could be applied to a lot of different things. This kind of opens up the Pokemon Company and Nintendo to kind of a backfire in such a way that if Palworld can prove that these are, you know, are vague enough or wide enough of patents to, you know, to say that this has been used in other examples and we were just going with that idea, then that could invalidate those patents, and that would stop, you know, stop Nintendo and the Pokemon Company from actually pursuing anything, because those patents would be invalidated. And at that point, then that opens up the Nintendo Company or the Pokemon Company and Nintendo for a countersuit for damages based off of the injunction. So the injunction right now is they're seeking a fine for a very small amount. It comes out to be like $36,000 or some shit.
Yeah, but they're seeking to block the sale of the game further.
Right. The injunction itself is to prevent the sale of the game until the mechanics detailed in those three patents, the Pokemon, a Pokeball style catching, a riding of pals, things like that, is removed or reworked in a way that it no longer infringes upon the patents. Which, of course, being that's a core gameplay loop, that's going to be a significant change to how Palworld plays. So this is kind of like a Nintendo strong arm. They've done it before. Where they're going to be like, okay, well, we really don't want money from you, but we want to embroil you in some legal, in a legal fight that's going to cost you a lot of money to fight us, and in hopes that you just back down, you know? So, but Palworld got a bunch of money off of the sales of this game initially. So if they do decide to fight, and there is a possibility that they could win, that's a big black eye towards Nintendo and the Pokemon Company. And it opens up those mechanics to be freely used in just about any other game that decides that they want to do it. And if anything, I know about developers, they're going to latch on to that one thing and use it to fucking hell. Because, I mean, if you remember, like, when the original Mickey Mouse was a Steamboat, is it Steamboat Willie?
Steamboat Willie, yeah.
Yeah. When that when that patent expired from Disney, there was almost within a week or two, a bunch of, Steamboat Willie knockoff style games using that art style, right? Because it no longer could be fought in as a patent infringement or a trademark infringement. So it's going to happen. I'm interested to see how Pocket Pair handles this. If they back down just like many other companies have in recent years, it'll be kind of disappointing, honestly. I can't see them really. It would hurt their bottom line to basically prevent the sale of the game until they reworked it. I can imagine them easily reworking it, considering the game already has like guns and shit. They could probably just go with a different capture method and it would be perfectly fine.
Right. Like you trank it or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, anything else other than a Pokeball. Right. But
it's just, you put it in a little cat carrier.
put a little cat carrier, like a freaking, I don't know, like a laser beam that just scans the creature or some shit. I don't know, man. There's any number of different options, right? But, if they go up against Nintendo and win, that's going to be news. That's going to definitely be news.
I hope they do. This whole bit with Nintendo being a bully over every little bitty thing that's even remotely similar to them has been ridiculous for the last, I don't know, decades at this point, right?
It's been about, I think, within the last 10 years. Yeah, it's been a big issue. They've hit a lot of, they hit the ROMs. They were cracking down on YouTube videos. Basically, they were trying to control media coverage for a while.
They've turned into the video game mafia.
It really nuts.
Yeah, and most they of their stuff
a black is, eye, and I hope Pal World can actually provide.
Yeah, they haven't done anything, hardly anything notable. I'm one of the few people who was like Zelda.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I haven't even played the latest Zelda game. I've been on a
boycott Nintendo fix for about, I don't know, 10 years at this point.
Yeah, I really haven't had the only game that I really wanted out of Nintendo was Metroid Prime 4, which was also one of those games that was name dropped way too early and then fucking decided to fuck off into Netherland. So yeah, Nintendo really doesn't hold anything for me right now.
But, yep. So
I kind of agree.
Rusty, you've been looking for a new processor for the last couple of months, right?
Well, I mean, I decided when I did my upgrade, I was, I was looking to, to go with a new AMD processor. Yeah.
There was I'll let you do most of the commentary on here, but what prompted this, and I hadn't been looking, right? There's the new AMD Ryzen 7 9800. X3D, someone is able to overclock it to a stable 6.9 gigahertz and about 1500 FPS in a, I want to say it was like Counter-Strike. It's 1080p.
1080p, yeah.
But still, that's pretty insane.
It's nuts.
But it's pretty hard to find right now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people looking at the 9000 series AMD processors.
Is it still an AM5?
Yeah.
So you can put it in anything you've already upgraded to AM5.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a drop-in processor for most modern AMD motherboards. So that makes it very appealing. But the thing was, the flagship of of games, gaming processors prior to this was the 7800 X3D, which is the one I've got.
That was the one I was looking to upgrade to, and then this dropped, and I was like, "Oh, well, wait a minute."
Yeah, this the 7800 X3D is a beast of a processor. This thing is just great. It does everything you wanted to do in games and more. It has, it just handles a lot. The 9800 X3D, it is beating it out of the box by anywhere between 10% to 27%.
Yeah, and it says that the base overclock that you can put without going crazy is 5.2 gigahertz, but you can unlock the voltage on this chip and go further, right?
Yes, you can. If you want to, and you've got enough, if you've got enough of a cooling system that can handle it, and a motherboard that has the right VRMs for it, you can really push this processor. But you don't need to. Out of the box, it'll handle it'll handle everything that is current in gaming.
Well,
all the way up through 4K.
I'm running into CPU lock issues right now.
Most people are actually running into a GPU. It's GPU bottleneck.
That's not where I'm at. I'm on the opposite side of it.
Right. So for you, you would be, you know, it would bring it up to the point where your GPU bottlenecked again.
Right.
Whereas
should not.
Right now, my machine, 7800X3D and a 3090, that's a respectable machine. And they're about even, right? So initially.
They are about even. Initially, when reviewers were first looking at it, but right now,
when you go up to the 4000 series or even the coming 5000 series GPUs, that 7800X3D is going to kind of be your bottleneck. So, the plan for me initially when I built this machine was to go AM5, get a 9000 series processor. Unfortunately, the first set of processors sucked for gaming. The 9950X was really good for like productivity. If you were doing renders or something, stuff like that, super great for that. In fact, I just built a machine for somebody to do, 3D AutoCAD renders using the 9950, X, and that was great. But it sucks for games. You just need that extra cash that this has, to be able to, to load the games and load small files very, very quickly.
So I'm interested for gaming because it's a 16 thread, right?
It's 8-core 16 thread. Yeah. So
is it just that it runs more efficiently? Cause I feel like.
It's not that it runs efficiently. It's actually lower in efficiency than most of the other AMD processors as far as power efficiency. What it has is it has changed some of the architecture so that the cache is actually on on processor, but in its it's evened out. It's not layered in such a way.
Really what they did with the 9000 series is they changed the architecture in a way that the 3D cache on the 9800X3D is now stacked below the processor.
Well,
so that the processor doesn't have this like thermal blanket over it. It has contact directly with the
heat spreader.
The heat spreader, the IHS. So what you're actually getting now is a fully unlocked processor where X3Ds in the past were voltage locked so that you couldn't really change the voltage to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's fully unlocked. There's actually several overclockers already who have gotten the thing up to 7.2 megahertz.
Yeah, well, they're probably, anything like this, they're going to be, using extreme overclock stuff, liquid nitrogen and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. The idea is pulling that IHS off gives you access to direct die. Which not a lot of processors actually have, direct die. Like there's normally a thermal layer over top of that, or a layer over top of it. But now you can look at that and you can actually see the die. It's good for heat dissipation, but it's really a combination of good chip design, adding that cache where it needs to be. And this right here delivers what gamers want in a processor.
So
it is now the new flagship.
So help me understand. So I've got and this is just me being a little bit dumb, right? Like I've got a Ryzen 9 5900X, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a 12 core, 24 virtual thread processor.
Right.
That has 70 megabytes of cache. And a 4.8 gigahertz max boost. So this has 0.4 more gigahertz, but 8 fewer threads and 26 more megabytes of cache. How does it operate that much better? Because I've seen a lot of stuff that it's running better than fucking everything.
So what it comes down to, specifically for these X3D chips, is that the cores, the chiplet design, there's generally going to be certain cores that are your primary cores, certain cores that are secondary cores. And the primary cores have a much higher clock speed. They're very much more responsive, and they have direct access to that that 3D cache. Whereas the secondary chiplet has a it still has access to it, but it has to go through the first chip. So it's not as fast. So you're going to have basically essentially performance cores and to use Intel's Intel's technology terms, performance cores and efficiency cores, right?
Gotcha. So even though
your X doesn't have the 3D cache, it may have cache that's available to it, but it's not as fast as their 3D, as AMD's 3D cache.
Right. And it's an AM4, so I can only do DDR4 too as well. Right.
And
so I know there's something I'm missing.
To faster memory is great.
So it'd be a huge upgrade, right? Because I think the retail price for it's $479, but then I need a $200, board, and then I need a, more RAM. So another $200 worth of RAM. So like the full upgrade for me is like $800 probably when I decide I want to do that.
Yeah, but it would definitely be worth it. You're going to see performance gains, mainly because the 9800X3D, what you're really looking for in gaming is single core performance. You want you want your main core, what's going to be running your game. You want that to be as beefy as possible. It doesn't matter if you've got 16 or 38 or however many cores that you've got in your game, in your machine, if you're playing games. And that's what most people are most people looking at at all of these different options, they're going to look at the 9950X and then be like, well, that's a better processor. It's got more cores in it. And that's not the case.
Yeah, it's the efficiency of each core.
Right. You want to make sure that you're...
I wonder if it knocks down productivity, though, for me when I'm running different things. Like, I was... So there's a... Well, I won't go in too far into the weeds, but, I do a lot of photography on the side. And I was trying out a feature called Super Resolution, which is done by Topaz. So I use three apps, right? I use something called Luminar Neo, which does really good for landscapes. I use Lightroom a lot for portraits of any sort, right? Whether it be concert shots or whatever. And then I use Topaz AI for helping me with noise reduction on really low light shots, which I do a whole lot of. And I was trying out a feature just to see what it would do today called Super Resolution, right? It's supposed to completely enhance. I've used it one other time and just didn't like the results on teeth. Made my teeth look really fucking weird. Mm-hmm. But it takes a while to render. So for me, I was sitting there bitching and moaning because it said it was going to take 6 minutes. So my native resolution on my pictures is 6,000 by 4,000 resolution, right? So... past 4K, basically, right? I guess it'd be 6K, essentially. Not quite, because it's 3.2. And it said it was going to take 6 minutes to render the whole thing, because I was rendering the full image. I was looking at other people, though, that had a 3080. And, they didn't list what their CPU was. It was taking 19 minutes to render.
Yeah.
And then people that were running an Alpha 4, which... does a resolution that's double what mine is, but long story short, it has really bad noise on low light photos, which is why I returned it because I tried it. It was taking them upwards of an hour to render images. And so I wonder if I got something like that, if it even further speed that up. I realize that part of that is I've got an NVMe, so that helps, right? I've got a fuckload, I've got 64 gigs of RAM, so that helps out a lot. And then I've got a 4090. But I wonder if the CPU an upgrade on the CPU helps that. Because, like, every time I've run that feature, I watch, because I've got a Lian Li case, right? I can see what's going on. I watch my 4090 fan spin up every time I've used that feature.
Right.
So this is GPU rendering.
So it looks like just a cursory search with, you know, online. It looks like Topaz uses GPU rendering for their AI. So unless you can run your, and when you run your upscaling, have a hardware monitor pulled up, and you can tell where your processor's at as far as utilization.
Yeah.
And see where it's at. If your processor is anything less than 100%, then it's all GPU. And upgrading your processor isn't going to really affect your ability to run that, you know, that render faster.
I run into I run into other issues too that are not GPU intensive, where I'll have both up. So like you with Photoshop but more with Lightroom, you import a photo library, right? So let's say I take concert shots, and I break them up right by band, so that I don't have 3,000 images in a single Lightroom session. But I'll have like 1,000 images loaded, right? And I'm going to edit like, you know, 50 of them or less. And when I'm doing that, like, it does sometimes slow down my machine a little bit, like, because it loads up previews for all 1,000 images, right? And sometimes that import takes a couple minutes, and that's even on an NVMe. And so I've wondered, like, again, the reason I have a lot of RAM, that actually makes a difference. I've seen some people are like, yeah, I can only import about 500 photos at a time, and I have to break up my sessions to make it work. So it's not loading all the raw files, but it generates a preview for each one of those. And then when you're editing it, right, like every image that my camera spits out is about 55 megs, right? So 55 megs times 1,000.
Right.
That's a lot of memory.
Well, I can tell you right now.
So that's one of the reasons I've made a case for upgrading to DDR5.
Yeah, for Lightroom.
And if I'm going to get AM5, right, I might as well get the best.
Right. So for Lightroom, what you're looking at in for Lightroom is it uses GPU for the images, but the load is CPU. So you're going to kind of want to have both of those be as beefy as possible. So yeah, you're going to see you'll see gains on that, even though you're losing some cores. I don't think you're going to run into problems because each one of the cores that you're upgrading to is going to be faster than what you currently have. Because they're, you know, those are one, you know, you've got one chiplet in there instead of having it split over two, and that entire chiplet has access to that 3D cache. So, you're going to run into, it looks, just that it's too early for like user benchmarks because you don't have necessarily like a bunch of people that have them right now. They are chronically out of stock, but that's to be expected with, you know, the with all the hype that's going on around them. Basically, all of the tech reviewers on YouTube have sung praises about it to the point where now, you know, people are trying to scalp that shit on Amazon.
Yeah, I was even looking at user reviews on Amazon, and there were people were saying,
they're all saying, wait,
yeah, don't give any ground to these scalpers. Don't give them any incentive.
So the 9800 X3D is going to be better overall, even with the loss of the extra cores for workstation or like rendering usage. You're going to notice it in games. You're going to notice it, you know, in your Lightroom loads. So it's overall going to be a better deal, especially considering you're going to be able to upgrade to DDR5, which gives you faster memory, and you can at that point load more memory into your machine so that you have some overhead. So I would say it's overall going to be a better deal for you.
And it's looking like getting 64 megs 64 gigs of RAM. Probably cost me, cost me a couple $100. Well, what? No, there's a Corsair deal. I can get 64 gigs for 150.
Yeah, and you should really look into, you know, you can look into, I think 64 is fine. But if you're going to be loading a bunch of photos, you might look into a little bit more. Because, you know, that's where that when you're loading stuff into Lightroom, that's where it's all being held in while you're working on it. So, you know, if you can find a better deal, like Black Friday's coming up.
Yeah.
If you can find a deal on 128, get it, you know?
And for me, I get paid three checks between now and December's bills. So I get it. I've got an extra check. So this is kind of why I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I would definitely look into getting more RAM DDR5. It doesn't necessarily matter. It doesn't matter it does, but it doesn't. Like, once you get into DDR5, the mega transfers per second, the number after that, it's minor. You're going to get a couple FPS out of, going higher, but you want the architecture. You want the DDR5 architecture, right? So,
well, these are just, it's a faster transfer speed, right? Like, yeah. I'm using the, I can't even remember what is that, virtual memory addressing or virtual overclock on my RAM because of how it works, right? And it's at 3,400 megahertz because that's what runs stable on my machine. But right. Just looking at this stuff is all 5,200 to 6,000 megahertz.
Right. You can use XMP profiles, but from my machine.
Yeah, it's an XMP. That's what it was.
Yeah. I don't use that because generally you end up, you can get good stability out of not doing it. You know, you can upgrade. You can go to what it
that
says
stuff's
on
super,
the box.
That stuff's super easy nowadays, though, too, right? Like, I got it. I did 3,800, but it would crash sometimes. And then I just downcloaked on the XMP to 3,400. And that's what ran, like, pretty butters. Like, I literally haven't had a RAM memory error since I moved it down to just a little bit. But yeah, these are like almost, these are basically twice as fast as the RAM I have right now, which is crazy.
Yeah. That is going to help your loads.
And I think, and I probably speak for a lot of people that are, we really cater to a PC enthusiast crowd. Like, my machine's multi-purpose, right? My other hobby, one of the reasons I can't get through a game as fast now is because, editing photos takes a while, and I do a lot of that. And, it's another reason to have a good machine. As I just mentioned, right? Somebody on a 3080 taking 19 minutes for a render. Not that I'm going to use that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. But like I said, there's 80% of my gigs are in a low light venue where I'm taking pictures at a very high ISO, which means that I get noise from blacks in my photos that needs to be cleaned up. And my Topaz load is 3 seconds. Which is what I use for that per photo. Whereas for a lot of people's machine, we're talking about a minute or two to denoise. I just don't have that issue. Like, and it speeds up my workflow like a lot. So to me, it's always worth it, even though from my lenses to my PC, everything has still cost more than I've made doing photos over the last 2 years, right. Period. I still haven't caught back up, right? $10,000 in camera equipment. Anyways, moving along because we need to just start hustling.
There's more expensive hobbies.
There is more expensive hobbies. Like, I'm not going to say that. Anyways, any hoozles. PS5 price point has not had a negative impact on sales, says one of the Sony bosses. I'd forgot that just launched this week, and so I looked it up.
Yeah.
$699 for the Pro, and we're talking like what, a 30% performance boost, even though they were claiming like something way higher when it came out. Again, it's such a weird market, right? Like PS5 Pro is like somewhere between console player and PC player, right? Like it's
getting there, yeah.
Right.
It's very close.
It's getting close, but your selection's a lot smaller and the multi-use aspect of a PC is not there, but it is cheaper. Mm-hmm. But graphics are definitely getting pretty close.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that is the console's saving grace at this point.
It's the I don't need to know shit about this except for plugging in an HDMI cable and my controller and power. Let's go. Yep. Right. And then having a performance mode and a pro mode for their games. Which honestly, like console wise, like PlayStation really has come out on top over the last 5 years, right? I think what's saving Microsoft right now is they've tapped into this PC gaming marketplace with the Game Pass thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us on PC are taking advantage of that because there is a decent amount of good games on there. Like I said, me and Jason playing MechWarrior. We'll be playing Stalker this month, which is well worth my $20, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole Star Trekker is another game that we were playing.
Mm-hmm.
I need to finish that before the end of the year too, if that's a finishable game. But anyways, you know, long story short, there's a lot of us paying for that subscription, which is probably helping out Microsoft there. But console-wise, like PlayStation is also releasing stuff on PC. So right. My PS5 hasn't been updated. And like, I haven't played my PS5, but like maybe once this year, which is nuts.
It's currently on right now. my buddy is playing the Final Fantasy VII remake right now. So that was the first time that's been turned on in months for me anyway, you know, because I've been PC gaming. So I understand. I get it. But. And that's one of the reasons why I was like, oh, PS5 Pro, great.
I'm sorry, it's hard for me to want to sink money into PS5 Pro when most of their exclusives, you only have to wait a year for it to come out on PC. And my PC can, even with the older components, like the 9900KF, can still outperform the PS5 graphically, even the PS5 Pro.
Yeah, it's the PS5 Pros. It was kind of like a weird thing. Like, if it is the only thing you game on, probably, but even then, kind of a question mark. Because
I think this console gaming is the reason that people get upset about the amount of AAA games that are released, right? Because that's they'll release on console, but a lot of these indies that we play just. People don't even know they exist on console, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them, like the select few that, you know, that do get picked up, do actually release on, you know, on there. Like, you know, for instance, we've also, you know, seen like Slay the Spire 2 is coming, you know, coming out soon. And that's, you know, that's just an example of, you know, some indies that, you know, that ended up on, you know, in mainstream consoles. But yeah, you know, like Zero Sievert, for instance, I don't think that's on. Is that on PlayStation? I don't know. It's not something that I would expect on PlayStation. You know, that's the kind of thing. But with the PlayStation 5, when PlayStation 5 first came out, there was a shortage, and like any fucking tech thing since COVID, if it releases with a shortage, the scalpers come out to play. You know, just like the fucking processor, I'm waiting for fucking, you know, more stock so that the scalpers can get fucked. Right now there isn't a lack of PS5 Pros. But scalpers bought up the first batch of PS5 Pros that hit the market. And then they released another batch and they're still in stock. So those scalpers are holding onto and in some cases actually losing money reselling those PS5 Pros. And I hope they have to fucking eat them. I really hope they have to just sit there and fucking eat them. There just needs to be a release where it just like de-incentivizes this shit from, you know, from happening in tech, because it is total bullshit. Fucking, you know, scalpers in tech need to go fuck off. Because nobody needs this shit on day one. Nobody. I don't need that processor on day one. I don't need a PS5 Pro on day one. I didn't need fucking TP.
I mean, we did 20 years ago where we were like working overtime and saving up for like all of this stuff. But it's like now that you like have a little bit of extra cash because, you know, you're making 40-year-old money versus 20-year-old money.
Mm.
It's like, maybe I wait. Maybe I'll wait.
I'll wait till I pay a reasonable amount. Yeah, I don't need it right away. And that's the thing.
It's the difference between like when you're young and you like spend your paycheck to the last penny versus right. Now where never, ever, 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 ever do that.
I couldn't even imagine. The only thing that's really empowering scalpers right now to do this shit is that people buy from them. So the moment that they stop buying from scalpers, the scalpers no longer have a avenue of getting profit off of nothing, a profit off of being faster than them on a fucking buy button, then it just will, it'll fizzle out. It'll go away. And I think that there is, I hope that shit changes. So that's not a big problem anymore. But I mean, I do acknowledge in the last 4 years or so, it's been kind of, kind of a weird market in tech because of, you know, world issues. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But, it's good to see at least at this point that Sony made enough of them that the initial batch that ended up in scalpers' hands will hopefully sit there and rot. And that gamers actually get the consoles that they want at the MSRP which is what it should have been and has been in the past and should always be. You know? So that's and anything that can, you know, that kicks a scalper in the nuts is
it's fine by me.
Super fine by me. Yeah. Anywho, I don't see much. I mean, there's other stuff.
I think I'm good. Jason, are you good?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see much more. Anyway. Jason, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends to show you've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast with our friends Boston and Musum. And TVGP.TV, they've always done fantastic things and know everything there is to know, possibly know, about Destiny. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right.
Peace.